The next case is Coors v. Brooms. The next case is Coors v. Brooms. Ms. Maloney, if you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Stephanie Weber Maloney. I am here today representing the appellant, Lana Brooms, who is present here in the courtroom with me. This case involves a modification of a paternity decree and a request for removal of the child from the jurisdiction. The minor child is the product of an affair between co-workers employed in Omaha. The child's father remains married to his wife. The child's mother is single but pursues a relationship with a man living in Colorado and wanted to transfer to a position with her employer that was available in Denver and take the child with her. The child's father lives in a small town in Iowa. It's a 45-minute drive from where the child and the mother live in Omaha. The child's father had multiple shift changes and worked odd hours while the case was pending. And at the time of the entry of the decree, he worked a shift from 12:45 in the afternoon until 9 p.m. with rotating days off. The parent's relationship is hostile and involves domestic abuse by the child's father.
And custody is not being challenged on appeal, is it?
It is not being
challenged. So why do we need to get down into the dirt here?
The parenting time was changed substantially by the court, and that's our first assigned error. There was a change in holidays, and the parties had stipulated to the original decree. I was not counsel at that time. The court changed holidays, the child's birthday, and awarded half the summer to the father, which was different totally from what had been stipulated to originally. The father's answer, interestingly, to the mother's amended complaint didn't mention, well, it referenced the counterclaim that he had originally filed to the original complaint, but said it's set forth below and it simply wasn't there. One of our arguments is that it wasn't pled and therefore we've got a due process issue.
But it was tried at trial extensively, wasn't it?
It was extensively tried.
And there was a request for an increase in parenting time.
Yes, there was. And interestingly, there was a request by the father after the mother filed this case for an increase in parenting time, despite the fact that prior to her filing, he had not exercised his Wednesday evening visits that he was allowed per the stipulated decree for a period of 4 years. And that comes up frequently in these types of cases. There was error in the child support obligation and the calculations there, substantial error. The father admitted for the first time at trial that he was farming even when the original decree was entered, but the farming income wasn't included in the child support calculation for whatever reason at that time. He was also employed. He was entered on the calculator as self-employed. That trickled down to all the various deductions, which in turn affects the net income that's applied to the table.
Counsel, there were 3 years of tax returns used by the court. Is that correct?
That's my understanding of what the court looked at. It's a little garbled because we've got the judge referring at one point to Mr. Coors' wife's income on the tax returns, but the number that's in the findings does not match the number that's on the tax returns for her W-2 income.
Well, in looking at the court's decree, the court set forth Mr. Coors' wages and then dividends, interest, capital gains, so forth, and then Schedule E income. That's the rental income we're talking about, right?
Schedule E income is the farm rent income, and then there was also his income from the farm partnership with his brother. Testimony is all over. Well, you can't tell from what the court did what he did with that Schedule E income. Mr. Coors, of course, wanting to reduce his net income further for child support purposes, as obligors often do, said, it's all my wife's income.
But the court included it as his income in the decree.
It's difficult to tell what the court included in arriving at
his
income.
Well, in looking at the tax returns, the figures correspond to the Schedule E income, and the court then added back in the depreciation. So if you look at the tax returns and the decree, they match.
Yes, and if there were only 3 years that the court was looking at in terms of the depreciation, what's required under the guidelines is 5 years of tax returns.
But there was no depreciation deduction allowed. There was the court added the depreciation back in, so that doesn't matter, does it?
No, it wouldn't necessarily matter.
So what evidence did you present that the court should have considered that it didn't in setting child support?
In terms of evidence at the trial or what was brought to the court's attention through the approximately 21-page motion to amend the original decree that was issued?
Either one.
Well, we brought all of what's in the brief to the court's attention. You have skewed the tax deductions on the calculator because you've got inaccurate listings of people as self-employed or as head of household as opposed to single. It frankly bordered on looking like it was an intentional effort by the court to reduce his net income as much as possible.
The court appeared to average. It did one calculation with him as head of the household and one as with him as single, I believe.
Yes, but also,
and then it averaged the two.
Also, in connection with the way that it averaged it, there was an expense, Section 179 expense taken on one of those tax returns to the tune of $250,000 of a piece of farm equipment, which of course skewed his income for that particular tax year as reported on his returns. And we had another issue with the abatement of the child support for the summer. Court abates the child support for the summer at the maximum abatement amount of 80%. There was no evidence given at trial about there's a reason for an 80% abatement. In fact, because the court split the summer as opposed to what the parties had been doing, Mr. Kors would have less expenses associated with travel back and forth. He presented no evidence as to any additional expenses that would be caused by him by virtue of him having half of the summer.
Is evidence required under the guidelines, or does the court look at the number of days involved?
I believe evidence is actually required as well. And actually, I don't think that there was even a pleading regarding any abatement at all made by Mr. Kors in his pleadings. So I think you're looking at number of days, plus you're also looking at expenses. And in fact, I think there was a recent case within the last 2 years out of this particular judge's trial court with respect to a case where he ordered no child support at all, just saying because there's so many expenses, we aren't going to order any child support, and that got reversed. There's an error with the retroactivity of the modified amount of child support. The well-established rule has been for years that you aren't supposed to penalize the child and the mother for the delay in the judicial process. The judge picked the date that basically said, I'm making it retroactive back to a certain date because I wasn't the original judge. He was recused. Basically said it's the fault of both parties that this took so long. We had other contempt proceedings which weren't a part of this. The delay was on both of their heads, so to speak, and essentially penalized the child to the tune of a substantial amount of money if you add up the difference for the two-year period that he didn't go retroactive when he should have. There was a private school tuition issue. The parties were joint legal custodians originally by stipulation, and they agreed because the mother started work at 4:30 in the morning that the child would go to school at a private school in Council Bluffs because the child care provider lived right there and provided care so that the child wouldn't have to get up in the middle of the night, et cetera, and got her to the bus, et cetera. And mid-case of this modification, Mr. Kors stops paying the tuition. Interestingly, he didn't even tell my client that he was going to stop paying it. She was advised that she couldn't enroll the child in school unless the bill got caught up, and that's how she found out.
He hadn't been previously ordered to pay it, though, right? He was voluntarily paying it.
He was voluntarily paying it, but under a joint legal custody arrangement, you make mutual decisions. Their mutual decision was, we will both agree to send her there, and we will split it equally. The interesting part was...
Was that reduced to writing?
No, it was not.
Is there Nebraska precedent, then, that you can cite us to that says that that type of an agreement is enforceable?
No, there is not, Your Honor, but I think that precedent should be declared because you're going to have an awful lot of people with joint legal custody relying on these agreements in the future just to have the rug pulled out from under him when things aren't going real well from one person's perspective. The interesting part was he offered then at trial when the subject came up to pay the tuition. So it's a mystery to me why the judge didn't take him up on that offer. We've now got a child at risk of not being able to continue her attendance at the school she's been attending, be with the friends she's made, et cetera, where she's doing well. We have a tax dependency exemption issue that I would like to touch on briefly, although there's other issues recited in the brief, because I think that the state court's ability to allocate dependency exemptions has been preempted by federal law. And there is a citation in my brief to the quote in the Federal Register, and I think it is very clear. The sentence is, and it's stated clearly by Congress, a state court may not allocate an exemption because sections 151 and 152, not state law, determine who may claim an exemption for a child for federal income tax purposes. I went looking to see if there was any other states that have interpreted that provision since those new regs were put in place based on the tax law changes in 2004.
Isn't it further defined in the code with regard to number of days that have to be spent with a particular parent to allow?
Yes, the overnight rule went into place by virtue of the changes in the tax code in 2004. The regs didn't come out until July of 2008. And that statement in the regs is in response specifically to comments that were sent in by people saying, hey, wait a minute, we want you to say that waiving a little decree saying you're awarded the exemption is good enough. And that's where you got a specific response that says, no, state courts can't do that anymore. And there were decisions that came out after Babka in 1990 here in Nebraska and in other states that were all relying on the fact that under the 1984 tax changes, there was silence from Congress on the matter. And so they interpret that as they don't care as long as the IRS doesn't have to determine who gets the exemption. That's no longer the case. This is not silence. This is an express declaration. And Nebraska law holds if there's an express declaration, that's it.
Thank you. How far did we take Ms. Maloney over? Okay, Mr. Puck, you can have an additional 41 seconds to your time.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, or I should say good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Counsel. My name is J.J. Puck, and I represent Dan in this case. And I want to start by talking about the federal regulations on the exemption since it was the last thing. I guess I am a lawyer, but when I read through these things, my understanding is that was a comment, a suggested comment, but was never adopted. That's how I read it. I don't know how you guys will read it. But to the extent that I went through that and her citation, these are all comments that were not adopted by federal regulations. Therefore, it's still up to the state courts to award the exemption should they see fit.
Has the Nebraska Supreme Court or has our court dealt with that issue
yet? I didn't think recently, as a couple months ago or this year, was affirmed on appeal the exemptions being awarded by this Court of Appeals. Not sure, Your Honors, but this Court of Appeals had done so recently, I believe, this year. I want to focus on the parenting time and the issues of custody. Quite frankly, the pleadings, I don't even think, from Lana Brun's point of view, even asked for a change of custody. Not being argued, it was not argued on appeal, but the pleadings don't say anything about that. This court clearly identified a conflict between mom and dad. I don't think there's any question about it. We think it's one-sided. We think the evidence shows it's one-sided, but that's obviously what we believe is the father. The parenting time in this case was prior to this modification, 4 nights every 28 days. I believe every other Wednesday for a period of hours. That's what Dan had. We haven't appealed the custody. We've appealed one thing on the cross appeal, which I think ties in to the argument on appeal from the appellant's point of view as to denying the increase in visitation. So I think they all tie together, so I'll address them together. Mr. Coors now has, after this court's ruling, 6 nights every 28 days and 4 Wednesdays for a period of a few hours. His child goes to school in Counts-Bluffs, Iowa, and it is a school that is equal distance, if not substantially equal distance, between the mother's home and the father's home. Father's may be a little longer, but it is substantially equal distance. One of the things that I think that as this court reasoned its decision, that is the district court, it looked at the conflict between the parties and how to address that. And one of the ways to address that, if you look at Dr. Tom Haley's testimony, and I think is credible, independent, appointed by the court by agreement of both parties at the initial proceeding at the temporary, that these two, in front of the child, I believe mostly the mother, and I think there's substantial evidence on that, including audio tapes, cannot have this conflict in front of this child. What Dr. Haley recommended and what we had asked for, and I think what the court did, was picking up and dropping off at school. See each other. They can get there, they can see the child, no hassle. Friday and Monday achieve that. My cross appeal is Wednesday. That's it. And if we're equal distance between the school and the parents' homes, what is the harm? Because the child is returned at 8 o'clock, I think 8:30, and if he keeps the child from Wednesday after school till Thursday morning dropping off at school, we achieve the situation where these parties will end any conflict because they don't have to engage each other.
And that argument was presented to the trial court?
That is correct.
And what was their opposition? What was the opposition to that?
Everything. The opposite, you mean from Milana's point of view?
From the mother's point of view or the child's point of view?
She didn't want us to have any more time. She wanted us to have less time. She doesn't want us to see the kid. I will quote Dr. Haley talking with the child independently with nobody there. Mommy hates Daddy. She doesn't want me to visit him. She doesn't want me to love him. Now, that's just sad. And that, I think, is the crux of this case. Relationship happened before, it was over.
Well, did the trial court give any explanation as to why it did not grant that overnight visitation?
No, and I in the motion for new trial, motion for amending the findings, he just left it the same. I argued it again and mentioned what I'm mentioning now, but that was left the same. And I just think we're talking a few hours. We're talking if Mr. Coors has to go home to Lana Brown's home, and we're talking about an hour as opposed to 25 minutes to his house from Council Bluffs, 30 minutes. So that, to me, is more rational and fits into the narrative of this case, if you will, regarding the party's inability to communicate.
But is it really an abuse of discretion for the trial court to decide that Karsten needed the stability in the evening to be home so she can wake up in the morning and have that consistency through the school week? I mean, is that really an abuse of discretion to not award that overnight?
In my opinion, in this case, yes, because of the facts of the circumstances and the timing of it, because we're simply talking about getting any homework done. And I would like to reiterate what the first case says. This is, as in every domestic case, a credibility issue. And these witnesses are up there, and the court is determining the credibility of each of these witnesses. That's all you can do. That's Mrs. Bruns testifying, Mr. Coors. So when you get to that area, I think it is an abuse of discretion.
But she has her own bedroom, right, with her mom. She was sharing with the stepbrother, the older teenager stepbrother.
That was the allegation from the beginning. In fact, that was the allegation from the petition, was to stop any visitation at the father's house, who was married to a lovely lady and who has other kids that she claims were being abusive towards Karsten. And so that evidence was elicited through Dr. Haley, who visited, talked with the child, and it was absolutely not true. That was the allegation. Goes back to, I think, the history that you heard at the initial part of this hearing of the relationship of the parties. So I think we ought to applaud the fact that Mr. Coors is with his wife and has his kids and stays that way. I mean, excuses for whatever happened. But the reality is that this little girl would have less conflict, less disruption, less discussion between the parties, because where does Mr. Coors drop off the child at night? Mother's home. So I believe it is an abuse of discretion based upon the evidence of the record and the determination by this trial court of the credibility of these witnesses.
Can I turn your attention now to child support, if I may? And you're not challenging the increase, the double increase in your child support obligation?
We are not.
The court did several calculations with regard to the child support while the other child of Mr. Coors is still a minor. The court used two alternative child support calculations, one in which it noted the father as single and self-employed, and the other one as the father of head of household and self-employed, different number of exemptions, and then it averaged those two. Can you explain to me if the evidence showed why the court did that?
No, I cannot.
Okay.
And I agree in some respects that he's self-employed partially and he's employed otherwise as an employee of United Airlines. So I can't understand, or we didn't get into it at the request for amended or expanded plea or findings, other than the objection to the amount. But we didn't get into the specifics of that. So I cannot answer you, because I think he is wrong in some respects, that the district court, and how he characterized the number of exemptions and, or more importantly, the self-employed.
Did you submit your own child support calculation as an exhibit at trial?
I did. And the secondary exhibit with the calculations with the other family to deduct until Drake turns 18 and up.
And can you tell me, if you recall, what the proposed child support obligation that you suggested was pursuant to that calculation?
With the deductions, I believe ours came in somewhere around 700 and some, but I don't recall. Now, the issue with that is we had some issues with the averaging of the farm income. And so I obviously, when I go into court, I presented all the facts, the income. I think we provided 5 years as evidence. Court used 3 years, but I believe I put in 5 years of tax return. So my calculations, I don't doubt that they are at the level that the court has ordered it. We agree with it. We don't disagree. We're not
appealing. So it's a little higher than what you ultimately proposed.
That is correct. Okay. And I would tell you also that if you were to change the exemption status, self-employed, you know how the calculations work. It may change. I'm not saying it won't, but I don't think it changes drastically to the point of even a 10% deviation on a material change of circumstances as a standard of this court. The private schooling, if I could address, and the removal, let me start with the removal. The first petition that was filed for modification didn't even request removal. The amended petition did, and that was subsequently filed, I think, a couple months later, but it did not initially request it. The court found no legitimate reason, didn't even go on to whether the best interest of the child removal was appropriate. I think, and I would say that I think that's an appropriate finding because her testimony was that, and I thought I wrote it down, and I must not have, I must have wrote it somewhere else, but that I'm not sure anymore that I want to leave. Something to that effect. That statement in and of itself was, I think, the reason the court found no legitimate basis to leave. If you don't know you want to go and you don't want to go, you have a little girl here, you have Dr. Haley's testimony, says maximizing parenting time by both parents, I don't think there's a legitimate reason to even get to the analysis under Farnsworth and so forth and so on. As to the retroactivity, I think the court did not abuse its discretion, and I think it should be affirmed based on the evidence submitted to the court. There was a substantial delay in change of counsel, and everybody has a right to change counsel. There was a substantial delay then for a recusal of Judge Troia that I don't believe was a warranted removal, but Judge Troia entered the order, recusal, I should say, and so that delay was significant. Discretion of the court was appropriate. Retroactivity was awarded, and I think it was not an abuse of discretion. It has to be affirmed.
Would the child support figure used, would it have been applicable in terms of income at the time the petition was filed or the complaint was filed? Would it have been the appropriate
figure? If you went back to...
Yeah, if you went all the way back, it would have been appropriate in terms of the income he was earning at that time.
Other than, I think, 2013, which would have been 2012, may have not been involved in the averaging. 2009 would have been, as opposed to, if I understand your question.
Yeah. Okay.
But I think it would have been lower. Because 12 had not been completed. Remember, this case was filed 10. We tried it over 5 days over a period of a year in partial trial. So with that, I think it would be a little lower, and therefore it does change it a little bit. You'd have to do that analysis.
And did you have a quick comment you wanted to make about the private school tuition?
Yeah, Mr. Coors was cooperating, and he was doing it voluntarily. He testified to that.
But he did agree at trial that he would continue to pay it.
We're going to address that.
Thank you.
He did not. He said he would do whatever the court orders him to do. And if the court orders him to do that, he would agree to do that, or he would follow the court's order.
Thank you. That's all I need.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How long did we take Mr. Puck over?
A minute.
Would you like a minute seven for a rebuttal?
Yes, I will, Your Honor. I will start with that last comment, because I can tell you where in the record he did offer to pay the tuition. It is page 1126, line 18, through page 1127, line 8. Also, with respect to the counseling, there was an order to continue counseling with Dr. Haley. Dr. Haley's counseling had been suspended at my client's request for any number of reasons. And the court ordered that Carson was to continue counseling with Dr. Haley for a year after the trial. I suppose one could argue that's moot because the year has passed and there was no supersedious entered here. But realistically, what this court is doing by doing something like that is sort of acting like a juvenile court without any statutory authority to do so. If mom's legal custodian, under the definition of legal custody in the Parenting Act, she makes the major decisions. If the court made her legal custodian, she gets to make the mental health decisions concerning this child, and the court effectively deprived her of that right by doing that. So by implication, the court sort of attempted to keep legal custody in itself to some extent. There also...
I hate to stop you, but I see you're out of time, and we've let both of you go extra. So
thank you, Your Honor.
You.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. Thank you for being here. You are excused.